There is a name for the tendency to allow a questionable decision to overstay its usefulness and to stick with something when its harm is clear and the damage seems self-evident. Economists call it the sunk cost fallacy. Economists have a name for everything. It's a term that describes the tendency for humans to keep plugging away, fighting the good fight, and staying in a bad situation, even when it's clear that the situation is not getting any better. This can have grim consequences for military planners who, as we have seen in the best of times, have difficulty changing course when they're bucking waves of consensus and orthodoxy from commanding generals, bristling with stars, medals, and stripes. But CNN anchor and chief Washington correspondent Jake Tapper's remarkable book, The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor, is about a lot of things, but it's also about how tough it is to walk away from a place where so many lives have been spent, even in a questionable cause. It's all about the war in Afghanistan. Jake Tapper joins us by Skype from New York. Welcome, Jake.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So the ways in which these outposts that you describe in your book were named become part of the issue of why it's so difficult to leave a place that had very, very little strategic significance. If we're going to describe a sunk cost fallacy in the outposts you describe, what were those costs?
Well, the costs are beyond the monetary costs and the costs of deploying troops to one place where maybe they would be better used in other places. The costs are obviously the lives of the young men and women we have who volunteer to serve our country and rely upon their commanders to use that service wisely. I wrote this book to as a way for me to better understand the war in Afghanistan, you know, which is written about in very large ways that are sometimes difficult to understand, by looking at one small corner of it, this one combat outpost Keating, which was 14 miles from the Pakistan border and in this very untenable place at the bottom of three steep mountains. And as you say, the fact that the camp was named after First Lieutenant Ben Keating, who was killed there, becomes a weight on the military, because it becomes that much more difficult to pull out. And for that reason, there are a lot of military commanders and lieutenant colonels and such who ultimately started coming to the conclusion that it would be better to not name these camps and outposts after fallen soldiers, because it makes it that much more difficult to pull out, especially when, as you point out, it becomes obvious that a bad decision was made and it's time to try to fix it.
Jake Tapper, what is the impact? I mean, you can sort of see the political impact on the commanders-in-chief and the generals and the Stanley McChrystals of the world. But what is the impact on that naming after a fallen soldier on the soldiers who are in harm's way, who would be most likely to have the rational response to get the heck out of there?
Well, it makes it more difficult to pull out, because they don't want to feel like they're abandoning a place. I mean, imagine if you're if you had named a home after a fallen brother, let's just name your brother Frank, and that you had bought a house in a bad neighborhood, and I'm just trying to make this relatable for our listeners, and you bought a house in a bad neighborhood, and you were trying to improve this neighborhood, and you named the house after your fallen brother Frank, who died in the service of trying to improve this neighborhood, it would make it that much more difficult to acknowledge that maybe that wasn't a great idea and this house wasn't purchased and you didn't have the means to do what you wanted to do. And I'm just looking right now at a map in the book, and there's Combat Outpost Keating, Observation Post Fritchie, named after Ryan Fritchie, Combat Outpost Lowell, named after Jacob Lowell, Combat Outpost Liebert, named after Patrick Liebert, Forward Operating Base Bostick, named after Tom Bostick. None of these places exist anymore. This is a map just from 2009. None of these places exist anymore as American camps, but it became more difficult for the U.S. to leave because they didn't want to be doing a disservice to their fallen brothers.
In your reporting of this, do you get a sense that the insurgents, that the Taliban and the soldiers sort of understood that the Americans on some level were maintaining their position in a purely symbolic gesture, and that that increased their interest in actually taking down the camp?
I didn't get that from the insurgents, and I did speak to a few insurgents, and I talked to experts on the insurgency and those who read reports, communications, and listened in on the insurgents in the area. I don't think that was part of it. I think that they just saw that the Americans were there, and they wanted to kill them. They wanted to get rid of them. It did become important once the insurgents heard that the camp was closing, then they went in there and tried to attack the camp so they would get credit for it closing, so that it would become a psychological operation and they would have this victory that even though the Americans were pulling out and the decision was made in September 2009 to close down this camp, and then the insurgents attacked on October 3rd, 2009, so they would get the credit for driving the Americans out. But I don't think they understood the significance of the Americans naming the places after their fallen soldiers.
Certainly the Americans understood this symbolic significance of giving the Taliban a defeat. One of the saddest parts of your book is how you describe the extent to which that delayed the actual pullout, even though the decision had been made, because nobody wanted to be the person that pulled the trigger and essentially created this photo op for the Taliban.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why the Americans tried to hold it, the secret, so close after the decision was finally made. The Lieutenant Colonel Brad Brown and the Colonel Randy George, when they came into the area of operation, in 2009, they wanted to close down Keating and a bunch of these other camps because they thought it didn't make any sense. They weren't achieving anything. The troops were way too vulnerable. Too many Americans had been killed and maimed while serving there, and they thought the troops would be better served, and it would serve the interests of the mission to be located somewhere else. They made their presentation to General McChrystal. He put it off for months and months and months. Finally, the decision was made, okay, we'll let you close down that camp and some others. And then they tried to hold it a secret. They tried to keep it a secret, but it got out. It got out for any number of reasons. And ultimately, they were attacked, and it was an overwhelming Taliban force. And I have devoted a lot of chapters to the actual battle. Some of your listeners might remember a few months ago, President Obama awarded the Medal of Honor, the Congressional Medal of Honor, to one of the men who served and fought in this battle, former Staff Sergeant Clint Romachet. But the surrounding mountains were teeming with up to 400 Taliban and other insurgents. And at the bottom of these mountains in the valley were 53 U.S. troops doing whatever they could to stay off this list of Americans who had been killed serving in this horribly dangerous place.
The book is called The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor. Jake Tapper is CNN anchor and chief Washington correspondent. Jake, thanks so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.